He's doing.
Okay.
Devamira, you're translating, right?
Yeah. Okay. All right, so that's
it. You can translate from Hindi to English. Okay. Yesterday morning, I attempted to define our topic for this time spent together in Vrindavan. What does say yes to Krishna mean, or what is the intention behind that language, say yes to Krishna? And the second was giving a scriptural foundation for that message, say yes to Krishna message. And I began the scriptural reference portion with a quote from Bhakti Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami. So this is just review. Where, among other things, Jiva Goswami said, for saying yes to Krishna, which I'm equating with his language, Sharanapati, or attainment of the shelter. Okay. Attainment of shelter. Rupa Goswami writes in Bhakti Sandarbha 236, there are two methods of taking shelter of the Lord. One, by announcing that one has no other shelter. Two, by giving up other means of shelter by using good intelligence. In case you don't have good intelligence, what are you going to do? Well, Krishna will give good intelligence, according to Bhagavad Gita, unto those who are constantly devoted to Him. Then Krishna gives good intelligence. And the nature of that good intelligence is an intelligence how to come to Him. And the intelligence of how to come to Him tells you what to do and what not to do. There's injunction and prohibition. So Jiva Goswami goes on to say, here's an example of the first one, here's an example of the second one. The first one is Devaki, when offering prayers to Krishna after he's appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, she prays about the condition of fearfulness of everyone in this material world, because what's certain in this material world? Where uncertainty is certain. You don't know when a monkey's going to drop from the roof, just like one just dropped from the roof. You don't know. So that condition, she prays, that fearful condition runs far away when you appear. Fear of death. It's not like when you become a devotee, or Devaki will not die because Krishna came as her son, or anything like that. You become a devotee and you'll never stub your toe. You'll never have any pain. You never get old. You'll have a condition of fearlessness because of knowing there's real shelter. And then the other example is Uddhava Gita, Krishna speaking to Uddhava about reject this, reject that, reject the other thing. Use your intelligence to not take shelter of that which is impermanent. So the clarity that comes from understanding impermanence assists one in taking shelter of the permanent. So there are these two different methods of taking shelter. So an example of that is found in the story of Sudama, Brahman. He has both, and we'll hear some details. The language I shared on this section on yesterday morning, coming from Sri Vaishnava tradition, I spent a special amount of time giving emphasis to the Ananya Gati Tvam, if you remember that. Ananya means no other. Gati means goal. Tvam is having the quality of having no other shelter. Ananya Gati. It's, you know, Atmanivedana, giving oneself fully to Krishna. There's a distinction. We heard the distinction. Rupa Goswami's distinction. That Atmanivedana means Krishna, I am yours. I am your property. And we heard Lord Chaitanya said about Vasudev Dutt, I am his property. So there's this relationship. Same with Sharanapati. It's a relationship. You do, Krishna reciprocates. You don't do, Krishna reciprocates. Krishna just responds to your regard for him. So you submit yourself unto Krishna as his property. Krishna makes himself available as your property. And then there's this other akinchana tvam, having the tvam, having the property of having no material possessions, no material shelters. Possessions in the sense, not that you become necessarily a renunciate, a sannyasi or a tyagi like that, but there's no shelter for you. Now this akinchana, we're familiar with the word akinchana from Queen Kunti's prayers. In fact, she uses the word twice in her prayers. Akinchana gochara, akinchana vitaya, and she says that one cannot feelingly, that's from your heart, feelingly take shelter of Krishna if one has some other shelter. Then the converse is those that have no other shelter can feelingly take shelter from the heart, take shelter of Krishna, and not be lost in the material world of duality. And then the opposite, those that don't but have some affinity for matter, for being the enjoyer of matter, that's called Maya, trying to enjoy Krishna's property. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur refers to Sudama as an ideal example of akinchana. He says yes to Krishna. And he says yes to Krishna in both ways. He has no other shelter and Krishna is his only shelter. I'd like to read it just because it's Bhaktisiddhanta's writing in English language. And in this particular case, you don't need a dictionary. So there's the clarity without the vocabulary. It's very nice. Those who want nothing from this world are actually akinchana, comma, devoid of possessions. Such Vaishnavas have understood that there is nothing in this world that can give them eternal happiness. The material world is a prison house for conditioned souls because we have been averse to Krishna. We said no to Krishna. We have been imprisoned here and have suffered the material miseries. Then he makes this contrast. Prahlad Maharaj was an emperor, but he had no possessions. And specifically, when Prahlad says in his prayer to Lord Nrisingadev, please don't ask me to take a benediction, because that's not a relationship. I'm the servant, you're the master. But if you insist, take from my heart all material desire. He has none. Lord Nrisingadev replies, here's my benediction. Rule the kingdom of your father. What was Hiranyakashipu's kingdom? It was the universe. He had conquered Indra and was ruling in Indraloka. He was he had usurped the position of king of heaven and everything that the king of heaven rules. At least that part of the creation, heavenly realm on down. And what did he do in order to get that kingdom? Intense austerity, and with that austerity, great power, and with that great power, he misused it in so many ways to oppose the demigods and took over the kingdom. And like that, it was taken from him. Prahlad has no material desire, and like that, it's given to him. But the benediction is you'll rule for 60,000 years, and you'll have no affinity for enjoyment. You will have opulence of the three worlds, but you'll have no affinity for enjoying. I give you my protection. So Prahlad has incredible opulence, but no possessions. And then Bhaktisiddhanta says, and similarly, or in contrast, is Sudama, who had no possessions and had no affinity for matter. Now we're going to hear, I'm just giving you a little sneak preview, there are two kinds of renunciation. The renunciation like Prahlad, and the renunciation like Sudama. Sudama was very poor, so one may wonder, well, how come? He was a nice devotee, more than a nice devotee. He was a very dear devotee and a very dear friend of Krishna. Why was he poverty stricken? That's not right. Krishna says, whatever they need, I bring. Yes? From Bhagavad Gita. The Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, there are two kinds of renunciation. One is one, there's a Sanskrit term, very strongly dislikes material opulence. Unlike the discussion yesterday, not too much detached, because after all, he went to Krishna, encouraged by his wife to do so, to ask for some opulence. But for his own purposes, he wasn't interested. And why was he not interested? He was a dear devotee, and a dear devotee, he understood the Vedas. Knowledge was revealed in his heart, which is things that are temporary. There's no shelter there. There's no happiness there. It's phantasmagoria. I'm not interested. On the strength of being deeply interested in Krishna. That was his particular kind of renunciation. And then Prahlad is on the other hand, or Yudhisthira Maharaj, or Ambarish Maharaj, or other examples, having enormous opulence and having no attraction, no sense of proprietorship. Proprietorship in the sense of being the enjoyer of your property. That's another renunciation. So Rishabhdev is another example, way over on this side, or Shukadev Goswami, way over on this side, or Sudama Brahman, way over on this side. And then way over on this side, great devotees of the Lord in Gaura Leela and Krishna Leela and other personalities. Incredible opulence. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, etc. Having opulence but having no attraction for it. The different qualities. And so Krishna doesn't force Sudama or persons who, or Rishabhdev, you can't, or Shukadev Goswami. You got to take opulence. I want you to take opulence, so you have to say yes. He doesn't force like that. He reciprocates with the heart of his devotee. And Sudama just happened to have that quality. He had no attraction whatsoever. He made no endeavor whatsoever. There's many Vaishnavas like that. It's not in his case, not at all artificial. Somebody else's case, it might very well be artificial. That's where the too much detachment comes in. Artificial. So Sudama was a Kinchana, Prahlad Maharaj was a Kinchana. Two varieties. Bhakti Siddhanta. The Akinchana devotees know well that the material world simply contains ingredients for the servants of Hari, Guru, and the Vaishnavas. They do not see this material world in the spirit of personal enjoyment, because that's proprietorship means. It's a subset, it's embedded within proprietorship, which is, I want to enjoy it. I want to possess it so I can enjoy it. Nor do they become indifferent to it. Rather, they engage everything in this world in the Supreme Lord's service. Unless we worship Lord Hari, we have no right to take even a blade of grass from this world. Akinchana devotees realize that. The heading is, what kind of Vaishnavas have no possessions? Those that have and those that don't have can have no possessions. It's just not, if we have a possession, its purpose is service to Krishna, if Krishna so desires. The devotees are convinced that by rendering devotional service to Krishna, they can attain happiness and auspiciousness. By constantly and offenselessly chanting Krishna's holy name, they realize the essential characteristics of Vaishnavas, of devotional service, and of the Supreme Lord. In conclusion, we have to hear Krishna Katha. So that's what we're going to be doing this morning, Krishna Katha, from the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, and then preach it to others. This is how we cultivate Krishna consciousness. If we are not cultivating Krishna consciousness, then we will certainly cultivate attitudes unrelated to Krishna. Dutiyam abhiniveshita. Strong affinity or attachment, absorption in other things, if we don't cultivate Krishna consciousness. And that cultivation of Krishna consciousness, mentioned in the two paragraphs, is offenselessly, constantly chanting and hearing Krishna Katha. So that cleanses the heart and pushes Krishna forward in one's hearts and meditations. That's the say yes to Krishna method, the cultivation method. So this morning we're going to be hearing and discussing about Sudama and his say yes to Krishna behavior, or his say yes to Krishna condition of heart. From that heart came his behavior. The story of Sudama, so many of you attended the Dwarka Yatra, because where Sudama lived was very near to Dwarka, Porbandar, and he was Krishna's friend who lived in Dwarka, and so they had some exchange when they were adult. That chapter, it's two chapters, Canto 10, chapter 80 and 81. And if you attended the Dwarka Yatra, you're going to hear many of the same things again. But that's very nice, to hear again and hear again and hear again and hear again. It never becomes tiresome, just like the Maha Mantra, because Krishna is ever fresh. So appreciating Krishna and the reciprocation of Krishna with his loving devotee and dear friend, just like Arjuna. Bhaktosime sakha cheti. Arjuna could understand everything that Krishna was saying, Krishna said, because you're my devotee and my friend. So same for Sudama. Dear devotee, dear friend of Krishna. So that chapter is preceded by chapter 79. Imagine that. And chapter 79 is all about Balaram, the original spiritual master, Balaram. And it begins by Balaram killing Balvala, demon. And then Balaram decides that he, like Krishna, will not take part in the Kurukshetra battle. Krishna became the chariot driver of Arjuna. Balaram went on pilgrimage, and exhaustive pilgrimage, and sometime during that pilgrimage, when he came to know, because he's omniscient, that Duryodhana and his other great student with fighting with the club, Bhima, we're going to have at it. So he came to Kurukshetra specifically to appeal to both of them. Don't fight. They couldn't not fight. That was the final day, the 18th day of the Kurukshetra battle. And the chapter ends with Balaram giving instructions to yogic brahmanas. Now, brahmanas give instructions to others. Balaram gives instructions to the brahmanas. And the process of yajna is not meant for material elevation. Yajna is meant for satisfaction of Vishnu. And the chapter ends with the following statement, which is leading us into this whole process of say yes to Krishna. The chapter ends with Shukadeva Goswami saying that the activities of the unlimited Lord Balaram are simply amazing, and anyone who regularly hears and chants and remembers these wonderful activities will become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Would you like to be dear to the Supreme Person? So here's the method. And in the commentary it says, becoming dear to the Personality of Godhead means Krishna shows his favor by giving ruchi. Now, ruchi is a very advanced stage. In the mature stage of ruchi, it's taste. And there's a preliminary stage of taste, that is, you just like to hear. You may understand, may not understand, you like to hear in different ways. It's pleasing. It's pleasing to the heart, pleasing to the mind, pleasing to the ear. However purified one is will determine how much relish there is, but even there's a preliminary stage of that. So it's as if chapter 79, that's it. You know, the Bhagavatam 10th canto is over, but it's not over because Maharshi Parikshit has taste. And then chapter 80 begins with this Say Yes to Krishna message that says, for one who has received this mercy of Krishna and has become a confidential associate or servant of Krishna, has a taste for these subject matters. And one who has a taste for these subject matters simultaneously has lost the taste for mundane subject matters. You know, Krishna Katha and Gramya Katha. Gramya Katha is just not interesting anymore. In fact, he uses a stronger word, disdain. It's like, yuck. Hint. Just in that little verse, long commentary by our acharyas, but it's embedded in that verse is the means to get to the stronger position of saying yes to Krishna. What's that? Hearing Krishna Katha regularly. I mean, specifically, Shukadeva Goswami says morning and night, dawn and dusk, morning and night, and every day. And that's exactly the program that Srila Prabhupada gave us. Mangal Arti and addressing the deity and Guru Puja and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And then come together in the evening and Gora Arti and hearing Bhagavad Gita. Why did he do that? To become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he can bestow upon us taste. It's our natural condition, but he can awaken that natural condition. We can't do it ourselves. We require his mercy. So we practice say yes to Krishna so we can get the taste for saying yes to Krishna, and then it becomes very tasteful and spontaneous. So these two terms, Sanskrit terms, Prabhupada is translated as one who knows the essence of life, or the word is translated interested in transcendental variegatedness, attraction to Krishna Katha, to at least to some degree. And the same two points that Jiva Goswami says are the symptoms of surrender or methods of surrender. Accepting fully Krishna's shelter with intelligence, guiding, rejecting other so-called shelters. Taste for hearing, disgust for sense gratification. So that was just two verses. Beginning chapter 80, Shukadeva Goswami hears from Maharshi Parikshit saying, basically, say more, say more. Please go on. Actual speech is that which describes the qualities of the Lord Real hands are those that work for Him. A true mind is that which always remembers Him, dwelling within everything, moving and non-moving, etc. Very similar, reminiscent of second canto verses where the Shukadeva Goswami says the same thing. What's the use of hands that don't cleanse the temple? What's the use of eyes that don't see the form of the Lord? What's the use of legs that go to the temple? Listen to how Prabhupada explains this in Krishna book. It's really nice. I like it. And it's right on our topic, the say yes to Krishna topic. One's mind can be peaceful only when one simply thinks of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. This does not mean that one has to be very thoughtful, semicolon. One simply has to understand that Krishna, the absolute truth, is all-pervasive by His localized aspect of Paramatma. If only one can think that Krishna as Paramatma is everywhere, even within the atom, then one can perfect the thinking, feeling, and willing functions of his mind. The perfect devotee does not see the material world as it appears to the material eyes, for he sees everywhere the presence of his worshipable Lord in his Paramatma feature. Now, in the evening I tend to spend some time on, you know, things that are temporary and we're still attracted to them, even we know they're temporary and they're going to bring misery. You know, we're not at the stage of spiritual perfection. Like Prabhupada is describing here, the spiritual perfection is the say yes to Krishna position. So things are happening around us, or we're moving along the path of life and something is coming our way. It's like a movie. And sometimes it's this and sometimes it's that. Now, say yes to Krishna means this is Krishna's arrangement for me to be engaged in His service. And it can be this side of duality or that side of duality. It can be attractive or unattractive. Pleasure, pain, happy, sad, honor, dishonor. It can be whatever Krishna wants. The say yes to Krishna is, Krishna is making this arrangement for me to engage in His service. What's the best way to engage in His service? Because that's how one thinks when one is attached to Krishna. You're saying yes to Krishna. You don't have to like some disgusting behavior that you see somebody do. You have to like it. Oh yes, smile. Disgusting is disgusting. Now, the say yes to Krishna part is, what's the most appropriate behavior or way of interacting with this circumstance in service to Krishna? You get out of the reactive mode, you get into the reflective mode, and you consider, you contemplate, what does Krishna want? How is the best means of serving Him? Pleasant, unpleasant. What's the best means of serving Him? I may not have the answer, but the disposition of heart doesn't change when you're saying yes to Krishna. And there's something very wonderful about having that desire. More likely, Krishna will give an indication what's the best way to serve Him than if you're in reactive mode. You're in reactive mode, you're like an animal. Protecting, defending, arguing, whatever. Manipulating, trying to control and trying to enjoy and trying to take advantage of the circumstance or something or other. A polished animal. And human life is this other one. The purpose of the human form is self-realization, God-realization. Here's the circumstance of life. How does God realization best fulfilled? How does the position of being the servant, Sharanagati or Sharanapati, in this circumstance. And, you know, anticipating the how-to question, how do we grow that more? Well, it's already been answered. By regular hearing and chanting in proper association. And trying to understand, trying to let the message go in and touch your heart, move your heart, cleanse your heart, and then see the intention behind the message and have full faith in the message and take shelter of the message and move to the position of transcendence through that sound vibration. It's quite mystical. Sound vibration can carry you there, properly heard. So that's the end of the introduction to chapter 80. Maharishi Pariksit asks his questions, and Sutta is now saying Shukadeva Goswami was very pleased, because he could have finished the Bhagavatam right there, but Maharishi Pariksit has more questions. And Shukadeva Goswami says, more Krishna Katha? Very well. Lord Krishna had a certain Brahmana friend named Sudama, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from all sense enjoyment. He was saying yes to Krishna and saying no to Maya. He was a Kinchana. Both types, a Kinchana. Tvam and Ananya Gati Tvam. He was both. And because of that, because of his submission and surrender, he not only had information kind of knowledge, but he was deeply realized. He could see the temporary nature of things temporary and had no affinity for enjoying the temporary. No affinity at all. Furthermore, his mind was peaceful, and his senses subdued. Living as a householder, he maintained himself with whatever came of his own accord. The wife of that poorly dressed Brahmana suffered along with him and was emaciated from hunger. Now, it goes on to say, which wasn't like suffering in the sense of suffering, as we know suffering. She was keeping the same standard as her husband, and she was very contented keeping the same standard as her husband. Something like similar to Devahuti when she married Kardava Muni. Devahuti was living, she was the daughter of Manu. She was living in royal opulence. She was given the permission to select her husband. She elected somebody that's living in the forest, with none of the royal opulences that she was accustomed to. And she was very happy, living very simply. No nice clothing, no nice ornaments, no nice food. Didn't even comb her hair. She got matted hair like her husband had matted hair. She just, you know, didn't have a comb and mirror. She just lived in the forest for tens of thousands of years, and became lean and thin. But it wasn't, you know, she wasn't suffering. She was very happy. What was the happiness? She was happy being in a relationship with one who is so dear to Lord Vishnu. That's why she wanted to marry, and that's what she got. And she was very happy with that. Very happy. Very happy. Externally looking like suffering, internally very happy. Very happy. So the wife of Sudama was like him, lean and thin and poorly dressed. She also had great knowledge. She's going to exhibit it shortly. She had control of her senses and her mind. Fantastic. Then you can be peaceful. So she was peaceful. Prabhupada writes something that he would say many, many, many times. A person who's actually situated in knowledge doesn't endeavor for gaining worldly situation because he knows, or she knows, I'm destined only for the happiness and opulence that's meant for me. Now, when it comes around the other way, something like Prahlad Maharaj, who had no material attraction, got the kingdom of his father, Sudama is going to get opulence, like amazing opulence, although it's not he's desiring it. So how does it happen that we described already, he didn't have opulence because he had aversion to opulence. He saw its temporality and had no attraction at all. So then how did he get this opulence if he had no attraction? Krishna doesn't force. It had to do with the relationship with his wife. And in his relationship with his wife, her unhappiness was not her condition. Her unhappiness was out of affection for her husband, her husband's condition. It says specifically in the verses, they were trembling because they were so weak from fatigue, from not having anything to eat. Prabhupada once said this about Raghunath Das Goswami. How did he survive? We would die if we were to imitate Raghunath Das. Every other day, a palm full of buttermilk. We wouldn't be able to live. So Prabhupada explained two things. He was living on the strength of spiritual energy, not the energy of maintaining his body, because he was neglecting it. And then second, Prabhupada said, his body was trembling because his body was so weak. He wasn't disturbed by that. He wasn't feeling pangs of hunger. How is that possible? Because he was so absorbed in thought of Krishna and chanting of the holy name, etc., maintaining his vows in Krishna consciousness. He was so absorbed. That was sustaining his life, not food. So this was Sudama's condition. And in full knowledge, he and his wife, detached from anything temporary, not artificially, but naturally so. And the wife was not anxious for her personal comfort, but he felt concern for her husband, who was such a pious brahmana. She trembled due to her weak health, and although she did not like to dictate to her husband, she spoke as follows. You know, it's kind of like the nagging wife. Those of you that are married, you know about that one. So when she spoke in a very learned way, and I'm not going to go through all of what she said, but she just, in a few sentences, she, anticipating that her husband would have reservation to do what she wants, she answered before he responded to her, you know, the answer. Basically, her request is, please go to Krishna. I can't, it's too much for me to see you in this condition. You're a saint. And you're a brahmana. And you're a very dear friend of Krishna. 1, 2, 3. And Krishna maintains all living entities. Krishna's maintaining the Yadu dynasty, no problem. What's a little brahmana? No problem. So you're going to feel some reservation. But Krishna's maintaining the whole Yadu dynasty in Dwaraka. So please go. I'm not a very elevated Brahmin, I'm a compromised Brahmana. Even if you're thinking you're a compromised, Krishna maintains all living entities. So even if you... Then I'll be embarrassed. I shouldn't go and ask Krishna for something. That's not a relationship. Well, just go and don't say anything, she suggests. Vishwanath says, just go, don't say anything. He's omniscient. He'll see your condition and he'll take care of the situation. Of course, he could take care of the situation even remotely. And very learned presentation she makes. He doesn't say no. He doesn't say yes. So Shukadeva Goswami says, day after day, those of you that are married, day after day, she kept saying the same thing, broken record. So he understood, this is something that's really important to her. For me, it's not important to me. I'd rather not do it at all. But it's very important to her. So he started weighing, well, if I do go, then I'll get to see my dear friend Krishna. And I don't have to say anything. I'll just see my dear friend Krishna. So gradually he moved from not saying yes or no to saying yes to his dear wife. So before going, he said, I can't go see my friend without a gift. But they didn't have anything in the house. So she had to go to a neighbor and receive from a neighbor some charity of some broken rice. And she put the broken rice in a cloth, took the corners of the cloth and made a little bag and gave him the bag to take as a gift to Krishna. And poor Bandar, walking distance is more than a day. It's quite a distance. So he's walking and walking, anticipating meeting Krishna, feeling some reservation, what his mission is to ask Krishna for something, although it's not their relationship. So he's just weighing the whole situation. And the first palace that he approaches is Rukmini's palace. Krishna sees him first before he sees Krishna, because he sees Krishna from a balcony. He's seated on the bed of Rukmini, and Rukmini is also there, and other attendants are also there, just having some discussion. And he sees Sudama, his dear friend. So Krishna stands. This is what you do when you see a respected person. I mean, cultured people do that. In the West, people have no culture. But cultured people, the vestige in the West is in a courtroom. Probably have the same thing in India. But everyone's seated, and then the judge comes in. And the attendant in the courtroom says, everyone rise. And in America, if you don't rise, you're put in jail. It's a law. You have to. Because he's the respected judge. So Krishna rose. He saw Sudama's coming. And he's my dear friend. And he is a brahmana. And Sudama was then brought directly before Krishna. And Krishna not only rose, but Krishna sat Sudama in his seat and literally worshipped him with ghee lamp and sandalwood paste and musk and so many things, betel nuts, and like deity worship. Bathed his feet and sprinkled the water from his feet onto his head and his family member's head to sanctify them, the foot wash from a brahmana, feeling good fortune has come to my home because a brahmana of Sudama's caliber has come. Now, Krishna is exhibiting, in this case, the culture of a kshatriya respecting a brahmana. And Krishna observes, although he's the personality Godhead, and all of the other residents of Dwarka are perfectly realized souls, they observe varnashram. It's not that because they're liberated, they don't. It's not that because we're devotees, we don't need to have any consideration for varnashram because that's material. Even in the spiritual, I'll say it a third time, even in the spiritual world, it's observed. So what to speak of, what should our position be in relation to such standards and culture? And after receiving him respectfully, and Rukmini is also engaged, assisting her good husband with a chamara, fanning. She's the goddess of fortune. She's Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Fanning Sudama with a chamara. The people in the palace that were seeing all this going on were just amazed, because here's this poor brahmana, so poor, his cloth was old and tattered and faded, and the commentary says his body was so thin that the veins of his body were sticking through the skin. And who is this person? Krishna stood and embraced him like a brother, warmly. So first was the worship as the kshatriya worshipping the brahmana. Now he's treating him like his brother. So the other residents of Dwarka were saying, who is this person who looks like, really? He's a poor person. But Krishna loves him like his brother. How many austerities has he undergone to get this kind of affection and embrace of Krishna? In contrast, for example, King Drupad also went to school with Drona, and they became fast friends because they went to school together. And Drona said, when I become king, I'll take care of you, I'll maintain you. And then they graduated from school and went back, and Drupad became married and became the king, and Drona became married and was so poor he couldn't even provide milk for his son. So he'd take rice flour and stir it in with water, and the other children were laughing at him. Oh, you poor Brahmin. So he went to his friend, Drona, who just rejected him. You, get out of here. Quite different standard that Krishna observed when Sudama came looking like a ragamuffin. Pauper, with such affection, because he's a qualified brahmana and he's a very dear devotee and friend. So, varnashram exchange, friendship exchange, and then next, Krishna begins a whole discussion. Well, I want to read something. Krishna says to Sudama, even though you are mostly involved in household affairs, your mind is not affected by material desires. Nor, O learned one, do you take much pleasure in the pursuit of material wealth. I am well aware of this. Having renounced all material propensities, the say yes to Krishna message, which spring from the Lord's illusory energy, some people, like you, Sudama, execute worldly duties with their minds undisturbed by mundane desires. Some persons in that category, unattached persons, haven't the least desire to accumulate wealth and prosperity for sense gratification, but sometimes they are found to collect money just to exhibit the exemplary life of a householder. This is advice for ISKCON householders. They act as I do to instruct the general populace. They show how, by proper distribution of wealth, one can become an ideal householder and at the same time a great devotee. Such ideal householders are to be considered followers of my footsteps. In other words, so Krishna had this like Vaikuntha standard of opulence in Dwarka, but he was totally, one of his opulences of renunciation was in full swing. And those who are followers of Krishna can do the same. Careful if your heart is not pure, because if you have wealth, it's easy to become attached to the wealth and proud of the wealth and the enjoyer of the wealth and fall into Maya. So better to be on the safe side, not too much attached, not too much detached, and focused on bhakti as you're conducting your affairs, in this case, household affairs. Very valuable instruction for householders in this whole section, how to deal with having things. Well, don't have things, that's one way. And then you have things, and then you're at risk. So how to not be at risk? Attachment to bhakti. How does that grow? By this process of hearing and chanting. This pastime, I'm not going to go through it because of time, this pastime of with Sudama coming to visit Krishna is narrated in Gopal Champu in a very interesting way. Like someone asked, how come these narrations are different than the Bhagavatam? Well, Gopal Champu describes it in a different way. The person's narrating Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka are two disciples of Narada Muni who are speaking to the Brijvasis about Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. You know, sometimes it's the other way. Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, his associates in Dwarka are hearing about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Anyway, it's very, very beautiful. The essence is Krishna is very attached to Vrindavan as the pastimes are being narrated. It becomes very clear. Gopal Champu is helping the reader understand the mood of Krishna even when he leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura and he enters into the school of Sandipani Muni. Before that he receives Gayatri or Upanayana, because he's a little boy. He hasn't received initiation. So Garga Muni gives him the sacred thread and mantra. It's a detail. Krishna, he's just attached to the cowherd boys. They're the same age. So he wants to invite them. Rohini comes and she wants Mother Yashoda to come. She wants the ceremony to be performed in Braja before Mother Yashoda. And the residents of Mathura aren't so keen on that. They see Krishna as their relative and they don't see the same Braja connection. So Rohini stays silent. But her heart is with Mother Yashoda. Krishna sends a message through the florist that gave him this nice garland in Mathura to Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj, I wish to have my sacred thread ceremony in your presence, but our relatives over here, the Yadus, they want it over here. Could you do this? Could you arrange for all my friends who are my expansions and like as good as me, have them on the same day, at the same time, receive their Upanayana, and then through them I'll receive my Upanayana in Braja. So Nanda does it. Anyway, then it's time to choose the school. And Krishna considers, well, the best teacher would be Vyasadeva and other similar people, but they understand I'm the personality of Godhead, so they're not going to want to be my teacher. I have to find somebody that's not as qualified as them. An ideal person would be one who has realized impersonal Brahman. Fully knowledgeable in the Vedas, realizing the impersonal Brahman, and a worshipper of Lord Shiva. And he knew of Sandipani Muni. So Krishna selected, I'd like to go to school of Sandipani Muni. And he went basically incognito, meaning because he just killed Kamsa, he knew that Kamsa has buddies. And if they know that Krishna's gone, then they may come and try to attack the members of the Yadu dynasty. So best if I go off to school, nobody knows where I've gone. So no ceremony, no procession. I'll just go barefoot with Balaram. No conveyance, no big fanfare. So quietly he went, and he entered the school of Sandipani Muni. Because he's now speaking with Sudama about that experience that they had together. And details of what that experience is. Back to the Bhagavatam. So he's discussing with Sudama about now their friendship when they were in school together. Krishna says, certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words that I speak in my form as the spiritual master easily cross over the ocean of material existence. Such persons best understand their own true welfare. So now he's moving the position of friend or the Kshatriya and the Brahmana, and he's taking the position of the personality of Godhead. Because I give instructions to everybody. I give instructions to the Brahmanas who give instructions to the Kshatriyas, and now it's just moving because Sudama knows this already. Sudama's a devotee and a friend, so friendship is part of their relationship, but he's in full knowledge. So now Krishna is speaking with the voice of the personality of Godhead. There's long commentary. So he says that the father becomes the initial spiritual master. And then with Diksha, there's another spiritual master. But the one who gives instructions to the Diksha folks and the whole world, that's the superlative person. And Krishna is saying, that's me. Anyone who performs that function, that's me. They're performing on my behalf. They're the same as my body. Then he moves out of that position and starts speaking about the good old days when they were in school together. Do you remember what happened to us when we were living with our spiritual master? So the Sandipani Muni's wife requested the boys to go gather firewood. And in the winter season, generally it doesn't rain, but this occasion, a particular day, torrential rain, big winds, They got lost. It was flooding. So they went for high ground and they were lost in the forest. And the rain kept coming. The sun set. It was dark. They couldn't find their way. They were quite happy because they were in each other's company, taking shelter under a big tree. And meanwhile, back in the ashram, Sandipani Muni's in big anxiety because these two boys went out to gather firewood and they didn't come back. So as soon as the sun rose the next morning with all the students, they went together to find Sudama and Krishna. That's a nice activity, looking in the forest for Krishna. Hey, Radhe, Vrajadevi, Kay. So he was doing that. And then he found them. And he was so relieved. And Sandipani Muni said, "Oh, my children, you have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature, but you are so dedicated to me that you completely disregarded your own comfort." That's what a servant does. They're not interested in their own comfort. They're interested in the interest of the master. Now, if one is not in the mood of a servant, everything is weighed and measured in terms of how comfortable I feel. Sandipani Muni is appreciating that's not you too. "This indeed is the duty of all true disciples." It's directly spoken verse from the Bhagavatam. "To repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. You boys are first class brahmanas, and I am satisfied with you." Then he gives them a benediction, unasked for benediction. "Here's my benediction. Two things. May all your desires be fulfilled. And may the Vedic mantras you have learned never lose their meaning for you in this world or the next." The commentary says, just like food, there's a statement in Sanskrit that after 3 hours, the taste of the food is lost. Similarly, the potency and the meaning and the efficacy of mantras that one receives may be dissipated after time unless one is Krishna conscious. So the benediction is, may you always remember, maintain your Krishna consciousness. Of course, he's Krishna, so that's not so difficult. But that's how we, as devotees, can maintain the efficacy, the fullness of the purpose of the mantras that we've received by the benediction and the blessing of the spiritual master. It's really nice. Krishna continued, "We had many similar experiences while living in our spiritual master's home. Both of us can realize that without the blessings of the spiritual master, no one can be happy. By the mercy of the spiritual master and by his blessings, one can achieve peace and prosperity and be able to fulfill the mission of human life." Commentary says, this is the Say Yes to Krishna message. Inconveniences, difficulties, hardships, and all things that move in that direction were actually an expression of the Lord's mercy to teach us the importance of service to the spiritual master. So Krishna is using the incident to explain to Sudama, for our benefit, the importance of, quote, sacrifice for the spiritual master. Because by so doing, Krishna's mercy comes into the life of that person, and that's what we're after. So how do we get it? Krishna's mercy. steadfastly, not thinking of our own comfort and well-being, and our mind says this and our senses say that, thinking of just exactly as Prabhupada did. Thinking of the fulfilling the instructions of the spiritual master. Hearing all this, Sudama replies in language that says Sudama's understanding Krishna as the personality of God. He's speaking in these different voices, the Kshatriya and the Brahmana, friend and friend. Now he's speaking the message of the personality of Godhead. That's Sudama. He sees Krishna as the personality of Godhead, who's so kind to him. He's acting as his very dear friend. And so in this way, they're carrying on discussion throughout the afternoon. And the evening is now coming. And Krishna wants to have some fun. So he sees Sudama's holding this bag of broken rice behind his back and says, "So, did your wife send some nice edibles for me? Can I see?" And he doesn't want him even to see, but Krishna sees. So Krishna snatches the bag from his hand, opens up the bag, and starts taking some morsels from the bag. When he reaches for the second one, Rukmini catches his hand and says, she doesn't say this is unfit for you, it's inferior quality, don't take it. You deserve much better than that. She doesn't say anything like that. What she says is, what does she say? "This is more than enough, O soul of the universe, to secure him," Sudama, "an abundance of all kinds of wealth in this world and the next. After all, one's prosperity simply depends on your satisfaction." It's a very, it's like a classic piece of the whole Sudama's story. He came to ask from Krishna. He didn't ask anything from Krishna, nor did Krishna ask him to ask. But Krishna took from him and was fully satisfied. Not because of the... It's very similar, different, but very similar to Krishna's visiting the home of Vidura, when he went to Hastinapur. And he went to the home of Vidura, and Vidura was not wealthy. He didn't have royal opulence in his home. He was living very simply. And his wife offered him different versions of the Mahabharata, bananas. But she was so excited, she offered him the banana peel, and Krishna ate the banana peel instead of the banana and was fully satisfied. He wasn't interested in opulence. The opulence was being offered by Duryodhana, and he said, "No, thank you." Krishna is pleased by the love with which we offer something, not the something. We want to offer nice somethings. But the nice something isn't the essence, it's the love with which we offer that something. I'll tell a little story, and then we'll get right back to this and we'll finish. Once upon a time, I was traveling. And I went to a place where it was one of those overnight flights, And it came in at, you know, some ungodly hour, you know, early in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I can't sleep on planes. I can sleep in cars, but I can't sleep in planes for some reason. So when I got there, I was like, and the ride from the airport to the home, it was just getting to be around time for Mangal Arati. And so it was one of those countries that you can't wear devotional clothes. You have to wear the other kind, and a hat and the whole thing. So when I reached the house, I wanted to change and get into a dhoti and tilak and everything. So as I was putting on my dhoti, a little girl, one of the family members' little girl, she didn't even knock on the door, tying my dhoti. She comes in and wants to give me a gift. I said, okay, thank you very much. Let me finish putting my dhoti on. And I looked inside after I put my dhoti on a tilak. What's inside was some strings of beads of different sizes and different colors. It was a gift from this little girl. You know, wasn't at all artistic, and what am I going to do with beads? But to this day, you know, there was the happiness was her making some offering. You know, sometimes kids do that. They make a drawing during class, and it's really important to them that you see their drawing and acknowledge the drawing they spent the whole class making for you. So it's not the item itself, it's the love with which the item is being offered. Just like Vidura's wife. Or here it's Sudama's wife. And Sudama carrying the gift from his wife that had to be borrowed from place next door. So Krishna was fully satisfied, and with that full satisfaction, it said Krishna was considering, I know why he came, but I also know that he's embarrassed to ask why he came. And if I gave him if I asked him, he'll have to tell me, so I won't even ask him. But the purpose for which he came, which is to relieve the anxiety of his wife, easily I'll take care of it. So he spent the night, and the next morning he's walking from Dwarka. I mean, there's detail. He has to get to Dwarka, it's an island. So he had to cross a bridge and all the way back to Porbandar. As he's going back, his say yes to Krishna message is like this. Krishna is so kind. He didn't even ask me why I came. Because if he had asked me why I came, I would have had to tell him. Because I'm a Brahmana. I couldn't lie. And if I told him, then surely Krishna would give me abundant facility. And then I'd become proud. Oh, I have so much facility. And I'm very special. I'm Krishna's dear friend. So knowing that I have this tendency for pride, Krishna didn't even ask me, because he must have known. He's omniscient. He's the personality of Godhead. He's the super soul within the heart of every living being, and that super soul is my dear friend. So he didn't ask me. Krishna is very kind. All the way back, Krishna is very kind. And when he got, you know the story, he got to his home and he couldn't see his home. It was just a few days ago. Instead, this big palace instead of his home. Very, very opulent, and these opulently dressed people came out of the big palace, and one lady he didn't even recognize, but his wife recognized him because he was the same bedraggled, you know, Sudama. Who are you? Oh, you're my wife. Yeah, yeah. When she spoke, he could understand that was her, but looking at her, didn't even look the same. because she was so nicely, gorgeously dressed and ornamented and so forth. And he asked, what happened to our house? And she said, well, I just assumed that you had asked Krishna and Krishna did this, and, you know, so you won't have to be in this impoverished condition anymore because you're his dear devotee. Then Sudama understood. Although he had aversion, that kind of renunciation, he had aversion to opulence. He came to see Krishna because of his affection for his wife, and so Krishna made this arrangement, thinking Krishna is very kind. And for the rest of his life, he continued sleeping on the floor and not living in luxury. His clothes changed into nice clothes, just like he didn't even have to get dressed, it just changed. Same as the palace just manifesting itself. But he kept himself in this detached condition because that was his heart, although he was in the place of opulence. So what's the summary message? The akinchana a person, going back to Bhaktisiddhanta's description, can have or have not. And either way, they're very peaceful and happy, have or have not. Prabhupada taught us those lessons from his own personal example. I'll just give two little examples. One, I'll try to say them quickly. There's a particular point in time where the devotees were requesting Prabhupada, could you pose for pictures that we can put on the altar? We have a photographer, he's a professional photographer, can you do that? So Prabhupada agreed. And then Prabhupada was the choreographer. He said, I want two photos. And one of them was to be taken outside. Maybe you've seen the picture. Behind him is this huge tree. It's in the west. Not a banyan tree, but a huge tree with lots of shade. And Prabhupada stood right at the front edge of where the shade was. So his body was with lots of light, and behind him is something dark. You know, contrast. It's like very smart. And Prabhupada dressed, holding his danda, just an uttariya, lightly dyed, and no kurta and dhoti, like the austere Swami, standing outside with grass and tree and shade. And then, you know, the photographer finished up that photo shoot. Then Prabhupada went inside and he orchestrated, I want a purple velvet backdrop. And he then changed into brightly dyed silk with kurta. And the devotee that was describing this to me said Prabhupada came out after changing his clothes, put his hand over his head like this, and did a little pirouette, turned around very slowly, you know, like a, I don't know, and smiled, you know, just like, look at me. And then said, he was taking the request for a photograph to give instruction. He said, just see, in service to Krishna, we can accept anything. We can accept a very simple situation. We can accept a very opulent situation. Our mind is not attracted or repulsed by either one. For Krishna's service, we can accept anything. And then he stood there, and there's that purple velvet backdrop behind him. And then there's another one. I've told this many times because it took place right here in Vrindavan. It's appropriate. And we're also running out of time, so I'll end with this. Before Prabhupada's samadhi was constructed, that area was just open. And Prabhupada went from his quarters towards the gate every morning, a little bit around 6 o'clock, just before 6 o'clock. to begin his morning walk and would come back at 7 o'clock for Guru Puja and then class. So commonly, he would walk out the front gate, make a right, and there weren't all those shops and rickshaws and noise and dirt. It was just agricultural land, left and right, all the way down. So it's a long walk going down. And one particular morning, he got to a grove of trees. And he asked, "What is this?" And didn't even wait for a response. He just started walking a little path that went through the grove of trees. And his mood that particular morning was the mood of renunciation, saying how nice it is to live in Vrindavan. One can live a very simple life, just depending upon nature and depending upon God. And whatever is supplied by nature, one can accept as one's edibles, and then the balance of the day, just be engaged in thoughts of Krishna, and chanting and hearing about Krishna. He went over to a tree and pulled on, there was something hanging from a tree, asked somebody, "Is this edible?" And saying, you know, you become familiar with what's in the forest, and all your necessities are there, nature supplies. One devotee, won't mention his name, he was in his bare feet and he stepped on a thorn and he started hopping to keep up with the morning walk, and Prabhupada stopped and said, "Why are you dancing like that?" And Prabhupada said, he said, "I stepped on a thorn." Prabhupada said, "Why didn't you wear your shoes?" He said, "Well, I was in a hurry to get the morning walk." He said, "Don't be negligent. This body is meant for Krishna service. Go back and get your shoes." Then kept walking, and there was kept walking to a place where there's like a kind of a drop off. And over the other side of the drop off, Prabhupada pointed with his cane, "See that house? Behind the house, there's a cow. And if the mendicant goes to the householder the time for milking of the cow and has his kamandalu, surely they will give him some milk. So the milk and whatever edibles, and then economic business for the day finished. Vrindavan is such a nice place." Just like in that mood of glorifying a life of renunciation. And then I took it was purposeful. He stopped, we're in the middle of this forest area in this mood, and he turned to Brahmananda and said something to the effect, "Did you receive the $50,000? Did you count it? Did you put it in the bank? I want to see that it goes for paying for the printing of the next publication. Please verify, get a receipt," and like all this business talk. And then, you know, did a 180 and said, "Yes, living in Vrindavan is so nice. Life of simplicity." Then, you know, literally, we're happy in this circumstance, we're happy in that circumstance, because we're interested in service to Krishna, that's all. And service to Krishna can look like this, and service to Krishna can look like that. The essence is Krishna bhakti, wanting to be in Krishna's service, whatever arrangement. That's the say yes to Krishna message. Exactly what Sudama, having nothing, having opulence. He was happy, and he was happy. And if the opulence had been taken away, he would have been also happy. We're different. We're conditional. Our happiness is depending upon having and not having. But that's illusion. It's false happiness. And when the false happiness is taken away, then it's, you know, a false distress. Because the real distress is forgetfulness of Krishna. And the real happiness is remembrance of Krishna in any circumstance. So it's a beautiful narration. There's many more details in the description of the pastime. But Krishna is showing us through his pastime the quality of one who has said yes to Krishna. You don't have to be impoverished to say yes to Krishna. You have to give things up to say it. But finding shelter in those things needs to be given up. Looking to Krishna, whatever arrangement Krishna makes for you, in practical ways. We make some endeavor, but not an over-endeavor. one of the causes of fall down, over-endeavor. You make some endeavor, and if it comes, it comes. And if it doesn't come, it doesn't come. We're dependent upon Krishna for whatever comes, after all. Okay. So it's nearly 9 o'clock. I'm supposed to end. Let's see if there's some discussion. Do we have a portable microphone? Two hands, three hands.
Hare Krishna.
You're on. You're on. Go ahead.
I have a two-part question. You mentioned we should hear in such a way that the message goes in, or we should read Srila Prabhupada's book in such a way that the message goes in the heart. So my question is, why it does not happen? And second part is, how?
Why which?
Why it does not happen that the message goes inside?
We're blocked.
And how do we address that?
Sadhana Bhakti. Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Start with that. That's a short answer. You know, there's a long answer in Anarjanavritti. There's many hour seminar on Anarjanavritti. There's clouds of anartas and the mist of ignorance that's blocking our heart, like the rays of the sun are blocked. The rays of the sun aren't blocked. The rays of the sun is shining, but between our vision of the sun can be blocked by clouds and mist. The mist of ignorance, the clouds of anartas. This is a phrase of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's why we're blocked. We're covered with ignorance and offenses. The reaction to offenses is anartas. So it doesn't go in. So now how to get rid of that? Anarta Nivritti. How to do that? So there's the process of understand what the ignorance is and what the anartas are, and cultivate bhakti in an appropriate manner. In short, offenseless chanting or proper hearing and chanting. You cultivate that. And gradually the mist of ignorance and the clouds of anartas can be dissipated by the power of bhakti. But meanwhile, the power of bhakti is blocked by the power of anartas. Anartas have a blocking power that Krishna invests. It's a long description. Several hours, you can go listen online. Anarta Nivritti. That's what and why and what to do. Someone else had their hand up? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You said when Sudama went to Krishna, he observed how a Kshatriya has to honor a Brahmana, and
Krishna was exhibiting different features of his relationship with him.
And you made the point that it is so important that even in a spiritual world it is observed.
Varnashram is observed. Yes, there's Daivi Varnashram. And it's in the spiritual world.
So I want to understand.
Although they're not their bodies. Nor are we. Go ahead.
In our society, there is in the devotee community, there are devotees who are brahmanas.
Yeah.
And then there are outside devotee community, some people, they are engaged in some kind of brahminical work, so-called. I want to understand how we understand we should follow this. One thing you said, Devi Varnashrama, and like other aspects.
Does anyone else have a hard time understanding because of this crummy sound system? Is there anything that can be done about the crummy sound system? Not at the moment, but, you know, for the evening. Or maybe just like the microphone that has a line, we can do that maybe. Something. I got about 50%. I think your question is, how are we as practicing devotees in ISKCON to manifest Varnashram? Something like that. Something like that?
But in more essence, like honoring like Brahmanas and so how we apply to other people also who are...
How do we do what?
Apply this principle.
How do we address ourselves to Brahmanas not in the Hare Krishna movement? That's your question? Huh? How do we honor Brahmanas within our movement as well as outside? That's your question? Yes. Okay. Well, who is a Brahmana? There's an essay Bhaktisiddhanta writes about who is a Brahmana and who is a Vaishnava. So Vaishnava Brahmanas and non-Vaishnava Brahmanas or Brahmanas outside of ISKCON, they could be Brahmanas in a Vaishnava society. So it's a, you know, it's a very broad question. But keep it short with respect. Now, if you're an acharya, then you may need to speak about the distinction between brahminical quality and non-brahminical quality. Because many persons who are in brahmana position don't have the quality of a brahmana. And an acharya may very well address that fact. You may not be in a position to address that fact. But at least within your heart and mind and intelligence, you should understand brahminical quality is what a brahmana is, whether they're Vaishnava brahmana or a non-Vaishnava brahmana outside of ISKCON. What I'm saying here is, I remember very clearly that 1975, there was a Mayavadi sannyasi walking around Mayapur. He had an ekadanda, he had, you know, horizontal tilak, and it was kind of strutting around Mayapur. So the devotees asked Prabhupada, and strutting meaning he was a little obviously proud. So the devotees asked Prabhupada, what should we do when we see this Mayavadi sannyasi? And Prabhupada's answer immediately was, you pay your obeisances from a distance and don't associate. So non-ISKCON Brahmanas, there's in two categories, qualified and not qualified, then two other, you know, Vaishnava, non-Vaishnava Brahmanas. So we respect them, in formality at least. And qualified, you know, there's a special appropriate respect that goes to them, although they may not be within ISKCON. And then, why? Because we know they're dear to Krishna. Now, Krishna made a distinction. Like, for example, the yajnik brahmanas that refused to even talk to the cowherd boys. Krishna wasn't pleased with that. Anyway, so a lot depends upon their position. The short answer to your question, a lot depends upon their position and their meaning, their qualification. Brahmana means one who knows Brahman. That's the meaning. So who's that? because they're in the position, we may show respect, but we also need to know whether they're knowing Brahman, or if they're Vaishnava Brahmanas outside of ISKCON, that they're following their sampradaya. So we respect that. And same, within ISKCON there's levels of Brahmanas. Someone that simply has received Brahminical initiation doesn't mean that person's a qualified Brahmana, or vice versa. Someone may not have Brahminical initiation, but they may have the quality of a Brahmana. So it's, our attention goes, there's formality and there's qualification both. And so it depends. Anything else? Question up front here? Go ahead.
My question here is that it is one of the classic problems.
One of the practical problems I face is striking a balance.
Balance in, I mean, like, what is a practical way of seeing when an endeavor is, what do you call it, like, is balanced?
Because, what's a balanced endeavor look like? Depends. In very simple language, Prabhupada said, we don't make over-endeavor. So what does that mean? We make a reasonable endeavor. And we don't get lazy on that side, and we don't make an over-endeavor on the other side. If Krishna, that is to say, if Krishna wants, Krishna can crown some endeavor with success, and if it's not Krishna's wish, then he won't. And so we're ready to go whatever direction Krishna wants. But we make some reasonable endeavor, not over-endeavor. His language is don't over-endeavor for simple things. And one of the examples he would point to is temple construction. Now he wanted this Vrindavan temple, and he pushed for it to happen. Persons who needed such intense engagement, those are the persons he pushed. But the general explanation to the devotees in general was, you know, send some funds. Those that had, he knew, had the capacity to do so. But not over-endeavor. So what's an over-endeavor? That, you know, that's kind of the balance question. Well, it depends on the individual. When your sadhana is being sacrificed, that's a no-no. When your relationships are being compromised, that's a no-no. It's an over-endeavor. When you become stressed out because the endeavor is taking so much time, energy, and, you know, focus, that somebody says something that you find irritating and to snap at them. That's an over-endeavor. You know, so it's kind of common sense. And, you know, different individuals have different capacities. Anything else? Okay. Yes? Okay.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is a question from Kanak Manjari Mataji, so she asked me to translate it.
Okay.
So her question is, she said that today when she heard you singing Jai Radha Madhav and the Mahamantra, she had an experience that it was, those vibrations were going into her heart, and it was a very enlivening experience. So her question is, what can she do so that her everyday hearing and chanting, she wishes that it has the same, when she hears every day and when she chants every day, those vibrations go into her heart as well. And her question is, what can she do?
I'll give a Bhurijan. Somehow, your voice was very clear. And somehow, the other persons, when they speak, it's not very clear. I don't think it's just because they pointed the device at me. Anyway, very clear. I'll give a Bhurijan answer. In fact, there's a longer version of something that's very short. When we're engaged in hearing and chanting, don't strive for peak experiences. That's his language. What do you strive for if you don't strive for peak experiences? You strive for your relationship with Krishna and minimally purification. Whatever the experience is subjectively, that's up to Krishna. Strive for purity and strive for connectedness with Krishna. And when that connectedness and purity are there, the experiences are what Krishna wants you to experience anyway. How's that? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Everybody knows what the schedule is, right? Don't say it in two languages, just say it once.